Kirk, good morning to you. You may approach.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And you may proceed.
Your Honors, may I please the court? My name is Melanie Kirk, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Gabe Stalzer. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for my rebuttal. Your Honors, the court should reverse the decision of the county court of Richardson County because the lower court applied the incorrect standard when it found that the minor child, Sophia Taylor, was at risk of harm while in the care of her parents, but it did not appoint a permanent guardian to protect her welfare. The county court improperly declined to appoint a permanent guardian on behalf of Sophia on the basis that Sophia's parents anticipated providing for Sophia's needs in the future, and that is not the correct standard. Before I go further into the merits of my case, I want to address the two other potential issues identified by the court. Whether the appellant, the minor child's uncle, had standing to petition for and appeal the denial of guardianship for his niece, and whether there is appellate jurisdiction for review of this order. With regard to standing, Gabe Stadler has standing to file a petition for guardianship over his niece and seek review of this court when his petition was denied. The statutes relating to guardianship of a minor, including Nebraska Revised Statute 302608, do not specifically define who may file for a guardianship of a minor. Yet clearly the legislature recognized that it is necessary to provide a mechanism to allow individuals to petition for a guardianship on behalf of a minor.
Well, there are, I guess, scenarios enumerated in 30-2608, aren't there?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is this one of the scenarios, a non-parent coming in when there are two parents alive and whose parental rights have not been previously terminated?
What the statute provides for is if at the time, the parents' ability to parent or parental rights have been suspended by the circumstances. And I believe
what does that mean?
I don't believe that there's been a lot of guidance on what that means. I think that that is the window in which somebody who has a concern about a child who is with their parents is given the opportunity to bring it before a court and request that the court look out for the interests of that child, because while the parents, if they are fit parents, would act in the best interest of a child, if a child is in the care of two parents who are not fit, if there was not an opening for somebody to bring the case, then that child would have nobody to speak up for them if they are a minor.
Can that person be a stranger, or do they have to be related in some way, or what is the limitation on that, if there is a limitation?
The statutes don't provide us a limitation, and in case law up to this point, I have found guidance with regard to a person who's incapacitated but not who is a minor.
Well, the statutes require that the guardian be qualified.
Yes.
That's clear. What evidence was there in this case that Gabe Stalder was qualified? What evidence was there of the relationship between your client and the minor?
I want to address that in two ways. Number one, the statute states that a guardian must be qualified to be appointed. It doesn't say that it doesn't ever clarify who may petition. However, with regard to qualification, Mr. Stalder is a maternal uncle. He cares very deeply about his niece. He's had a relationship with her. He had been in a position to come in, and his father, Sophia's grandfather, had been diagnosed with cancer, and he came in and began to take over some of his father's business and help his family, and the Taylor family was living on property that was owned by the grandfather and grandmother. And when Mr. Stalder, Gabe Stalder, came in to help assist with that, there were confrontations. He saw the situation that his niece was in and was very concerned, especially after Mr. Taylor, the child had previously been with the grandparents at least every other weekend, stopped allowing the family to see her. And there had been multiple concerns brought before this. The Stalder family was going through a lot at this time. And in fact, when the Taylors removed Sophia, took her out of school and took her down to Kansas, it was the day after the grandfather's funeral.
You mentioned the move to Kansas. Was Nebraska the home state of the minor child on the date the guardianship proceeding was filed?
Yes, Your Honor.
How?
The UCCJEA states that the period, I believe it's 6 months prior to...
consecutive months immediately prior to?
Yes.
Do we have that satisfied on this record?
Yes, Your Honor.
How?
Well, the child was residing in Nebraska the 6 months prior to the filing. And at the time of the filing, we filed the day that we, as soon as we found out that the child had been removed from school and removed to the state of Kansas.
So when you filed the petition for guardianship, the child, together with the parents, were in Kansas?
They had moved down to Kansas within 1 or 2 days of that. I think that it's important, Your Honor, that the reason for the UCCJEA allowing for one state to continue to have jurisdiction is so that parents or other guardians can't simply hop from state to state to avoid somebody coming in and looking out for a minor child, whether that be for a divorce or for a guardianship or for a juvenile court jurisdiction. In this case, the court found that the behaviors and the beliefs of Mr. Taylor do not bode well for Sophia. And in that in and of itself was a finding that there was a risk of harm for the child.
Are you reading more into that than the judge intended? Was there a finding of parental unfitness anywhere in the order?
What the judge actually said was that the views of Andrew Taylor and his indoctrination of his child in them do not bode well for Sophia. Taken to its logical conclusion, Andrew Taylor may end up putting himself in a position where he is not able to provide for the care of his daughter, but at this time he has shown that he anticipates providing for her physical care and well-being and her education in a state-sanctioned educational setting. Now, the standard for parental fitness. Parental fitness may be forfeited by a failure to discharge duties of parental care and protection. Parental unfitness is defined in Gomez v. Savage as a personal deficiency or incapacity which has prevented or will probably prevent performance of a reasonable parental obligation in childbearing, which has caused or will probably result in detriment to the child's well-being. The fitness standard is analogous to the juvenile court finding that it would be contrary to a child's well-being to return home. Now, the juvenile court statute does not require that a state in a juvenile court setting prove harm, but that at a minimum it proved that without intervention there's a risk of future harm. In saying that it does not bode well for Sophia, except for that the parents anticipate providing for her needs, the court has found that they were currently not in a position to prepare for her future. There was a risk of future harm, which is the standard by which the juvenile court, which this is analogous to, put forth.
What constitutional rights do the parents have, and how does that fit into this case?
I absolutely believe that fit parents have a right to raise their children, and a fit parent will make a decision that's in the best interest of his or her child. In this case, what we have are parents who are not making decisions that are in the best interest of their child. And yes, there is a parental preference policy, and that's with good reason, so that strangers or other family members can't come in and take away a child simply because they don't like the way that the child is being raised. But there
isn't that the situation you've got here?
No, Your Honor. I think that there, if I may...
You may complete your thought.
I believe that there are more than just disagreements about policy or political beliefs or religious beliefs. The child is at risk of harm. There are many parental duties that must be executed by a fit parent. And if somebody said that they anticipate providing for a child's nutritional needs in a couple of weeks, that doesn't make them a fit parent today. That doesn't feed the child today. And while educational needs may not show up the effects of having a negligent environment immediately, in the long run, it will cause harm to Sophia. My client is not trying to disrupt a family. This is not a case about First Amendment rights or his ability to believe what he believes. It's the fact that his beliefs and his indoctrination of his child in them are putting her at risk for future harm.
Are you forming this as a legal error, that there's a discrepancy between the finding and the holding?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that there was a question regarding an issue that the court had raised regarding whether or not there was a final order. Is that the question? If that is the question the court was raising in its list, a guardianship is a special proceeding. The order entered by the judge dismissing the petition to appoint a guardian affected a substantial right and was therefore a final appealable order. Once the petition was dismissed, the temporary guardianship was a nullity. So the appeal was protected or was perfected within 30 days of the final order. And then with respect to a cost bond, in preparing for my argument yesterday, I realized that it's possible that the issue of appellate jurisdiction may relate to the existence of a cost bond in this case. A cost bond had not been filed on this case on the belief that it was not necessary. No supersedious bond for the guardians is required under 3016.01, and no cost bond is required when supersedious is executed under 25.1914. So it was our belief that one was not required. In the abundance of caution, I did file a motion yesterday asking leave of the court to file a bond out of time if that is required.
Thank you very much. Mr. Taylor, good morning to you.
I traveled here today by special appearance by necessity without recourse to assist the court.
You may proceed.
To argue is to be in dishonor. To argue is to be in dishonor. To argue is to be in dishonor. I express my intent to accept, recognize, and acknowledge my Father Yahweh and Eternal Father's power of attorney. I don't understand any of you or your kangaroo jurisdiction, nature, cause, and ask you to prove now, verify the claim under pains and penalty of perjury as I make this special ministerial visitation under necessity without recourse. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on this it is in our as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us of our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but to deliver us from every evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory. Amen. Furthermore, the son and heir of Yahweh, the author, and affiant, the beneficiary of that state document, stands upon the covenant with Yahweh, attests by reference to his claims, paperwork, and evokes my right to remain silent, stands mute, and saith not. Peace be with you.
Is there anything more you would like to say to the court?
Not at this time, unless...
This is the only time you have. If there's something else you want to say, this
I
is your opportunity.
I object to everything that has been passed, all documentation from the attorney and the appellant. This is my law. This is what I follow. I do not recognize codes and statutes, as they are not law. They are not written in this.
Are you and your family still living in Kansas, sir?
We live on Kansas, correct. Our domicile is on Emporia.
Emporia, Kansas?
Emporia.
Is that where you have been since, how long have you been there?
We traveled and we established the domicile February, months or so prior to date that was mentioned a moment ago, before funeral, a month prior to funeral.
I don't hear any other questions, so thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal, is that correct? We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is Westward.